I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
My point with all this, we've got two bad bits of evidence. The difference between bringing up the dirt on Jasnah and other attempts previously to bring up the dirt on Dalinar, that's my parallel I'm thinking of here. The difference is Dalinar has changed. Dalinar has said, I am no longer the Blackthorn. Can Jasnah say the same?
That's a great point.
I don't think she can. I think the Jasnah of today would still do these tough choice things. And that's the point that Odium is making here.
Welcome back to Following Note on a Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 263, and we're in chapters 111 through 114 of Wind and Truth. Paul, how are you?
Delighted. Delightful. Insert another way of feeling good. Always happy with this book. We were just talking about this before we started recording, I think. That this has been a long day. Day 9 feels like it's been a long day. This is our third episode in day 9, I believe. And lots going on. We've got some cool stuff to talk about.
I could cheat and go look at Tim's chapter splits that he gave us to tell you when the next interludes are, but I'm not going to do that. Elliot, how are you?
All right.
I am doing well. I've realized also that day 9 is a little long, but the bigger thing coming to mind with these chapters here towards the back part of the book is the tension is really starting to ratchet up. Have you guys felt that? I think every time I'm picking up the book now, it's not just, I wonder what we're going to do next. It's a, and what is going to happen next kind of thing. You know, a little grimace on your face of, oh man.
I'm sad I didn't mention it last week, but chapter 109 was the first time, I think, in the entire series that I was genuinely concerned for Kaladin's life. I thought we like might actually lose Kaladin there for a second. We didn't. But in 109, like, I don't think the stakes have ever been higher than 109. And then we get to this episode and we are in full debate with Todium. Elliot, can you give us a summary for 111 through 114?
Let's do it. Chapter 111, Zeth is, flashback Zeth, is leading an army. He's managed to gather up his Windrunner followers because he's the Windrunner honor bearer. He goes and gets the Stone Ward Monastery behind him, kind of, and all the other honor bearers finally show up to do battle with him. So we have a big old draw the battle lines, armies versus each other. Zeth is trying to lead his rebellion. And then his father appears as none other than the Bondsmith honor bearer. Who had that on the bingo card? That was not what I expected to happen. They talk some things to unpack in that chapter. I'm a little confused, but I'm excited to talk about it. That's kind of it, though. It doesn't really go much further than that. There's clearly more to happen there in that scene with Zeth facing down his father on the opposite side of the Battle of Armies. Chapter 112, though, really starts to kick off this debate, the debate between Odium and Jasnah for who should the Thalens and Queen Fenn side with. So they kind of make their opening statements in chapter 112. They're going to get more into it here in a second. But Also in 112, we get a Venli point of view where she is riding on the back of a chasm fiend about to enter battle on the side of the singers.
Woo! Well, not for the side of the singers, but woo!
for the riding of chasm. Yes, pretty epic. So, but she seems to have made some kind of deal with Sigzil. So what's going to happen there? But that's all we get for that for now. Chapter 113 is a Tanavast point of view chapter, as he discovers, or he and Corvellium Avast discover what Odium has done in killing a bunch of the other shards. And they kind of talk about, oh, what are we going to do? And then they have a showdown with Odium. And they're like, oh, you're killing other people. This is not okay. We're going to take you down. And good old Raze goes, ah, but do you really want to do that? And they actually decide not to, because they're worried about destroying entire solar systems in the ensuing destruction that would come as part of that. So they make a pact to all stay on Roshar. All three of them locked on Roshar, bound by this pact that they make. Chapter 114 is back into the Odium-Yasna debate. Odium not only threatens the Thalens, tries to say, I'm the coolest, you should join me, also full out attacks Yasna and says, ah, yes, but Yasna is a terrible person, so you should not side with her. A lot of really terrible fallacies and things getting thrown out in this debate, actually, but excited to talk about it. And then at the very end, we get a brief little moment with Navani back in Urethiru. She's got Gavinor with her. They're all safe. And she discovers Lift and Wit impersonating her and Dalinar. And that gets us to the end of chapter 114.
Sounds good. All right, Elliot. In 111, we have Zeth's flashback chapter. He's got his army, and he actually gets in a battle with some other monasteries. The Stone Ward Monastery comes to back him up, but then they don't, and they flip on him. And then you're right, his father from the Bondsmith Monastery, who's the honor bearer, I think, of the Bondsmith Monastery, shows up and says, hey, Zeth, you need to, you know, stand down, and this is the only reason, this is the only way we could get your attention, as if I came personally. I took that at face value. You have, is it really his dad? Which I didn't question until you put that there. Is it really his dad?
I that is the question that Zeth asks in this chapter. He's like, are you real? Well, you can't be real. This is just a trick.
Sure.
A light weaving something. And then he puts down his sword and gives Zeth a hug. And Zeth knows that it was real. So that was enough convincing for me, personally. It felt legit. Felt real. We've had mentioned before that his dad at some point held the Bondsmith Honor Blade, right? Like that's not news. So
that's
it
true.
All seems to check out to me that this is not a double take. It's just a normal reveal.
A single take
that we're finding out. Yeah.
I'm not so sure. I am not so sure. I wonder if this is the maybe first instance of this unmade using fake people. Because
like in our, doing in the current day.
Exactly. So in the current day, some of our honor bearers that Zeth has fought have puffed to purple smoke after being killed, yep, which we've been rather suspicious about. What if, because back up a second to something I think you said, Paul, Zeth initially is like, oh, you're a light weaving, you're not real, but then hugs him and is like, oh, you are real. Because I think what Zeth is thinking is, oh, it's just an image. It's a light weaving. I've seen these before. If I wave my hand in front of him, it's going to go right through him. So when he hugs him and is like, oh, you're physical, you must be real. I wonder if the reveal we're going to get is the power that this unmade has is to create fake images.
Substantiation.
That are solid and can act and speak and control these, you know, zombie beings, whatever you want to call them, as if they were real. And that's going to be the surprise. And so this is the first moment. And part of the reason I'm talking for too long here, but part of the reason why I think this might be true also is because some of the things that Naturo says here are not very, the discussion that Zeth and Naturo have been having this whole time is Zeth is like, well, I've got to find the answers. He's really big on, I've got to find the answers. I got, no one has the answers. The farmer doesn't have the answers. My father doesn't have the answers. The honor bearers don't have, where's the answers? And where I think we left this at some point was Naturo kind of saying, help me remember this. He's kind of like, it's not about knowing the answers. It's about like asking the right questions and just seeking and doing and trying, and nobody has all the right answers. Well, he pops in here and he's like, Zeth, I have the answer. And the answer is that you're wrong and you need to stand down. And I'm like, what? What?
Well, and to your point, the first chapter we get after Zeth goes and sees the unmade is he goes to his dad and says, hey, dude, you need to keep your head down. I'm about to go start a rebellion and you need to stay out of the way. And then we haven't heard from him since. And then he just shows up as a, yeah. Now I'm a little bit more suspicious.
I see what you mean. And I do not doubt it could be the case. We've seen substantiation in this book. So it is very possible that that is something that we're seeing now. I was expecting at some point, like, how are we going to get information perhaps that, that his dad got the Bondsmith Honor Blade at some point. I figured that might be explained. So I'm taking it as legit until proven otherwise. I'm not in need of this needs to be proven. I feel solid enough in it, but I am open that this is still a fake.
Fair enough. We have been anticipating the very sad ending to the Zeth flashback chapters, and I think here it comes. Because Zeth breaks down at the end of this chapter and says, I am a horrible person. I was never anything but a child who didn't have any answers. I'm like, he's come so far, and now with Naturo or fake Naturo or whatever we're going to say, with two sentences from his dad, he breaks everything that he's worked for in these flashback chapters, and he thinks he's now a horrible person who's caused all this pain. And that's quite sad.
And think about what this is setting. It does feel like we might be running out of flashback chapters pretty soon, because I could definitely see one of the next events happening here is simply Naturo orders him truthless.
Right. Since he declared the return of the Voidbringers and...
Right.
Yeah.
And kind of, boom, there we go. We're there. We're caught up to where we left. And if that's true, maybe there's more in there, but if that's true, think about what that sets up with modern day Zeth. If Zeth thinks that his own father banished him truthless, we're about to go face... Well, hold on a second. I was about to say we're going to go face this, the voice in the unmade, but don't we have another monastery?
We're going to go face the Bondsmith Monastery.
We have the Bondsmith Monastery yet to go.
And the Windrunner, but we're skipping that one, I think.
Interesting.
Interesting, yeah. So his dad will presumably be there, or Ishar, one of the two.
Well, right. Zeth is going to be expecting his father to be
right
at the Bondsmith Monastery.
Both Ishar and Taravangian have told Zeth that his father's dead.
Yes.
And that Ishar has the sword. So interesting. Anything else from our Zeth flashback?
Just a lone solitary tear to shed for poor Zeth.
Yeah, I agree. Just sadness. Spain. He's living in Spain currently, just without the S. So it's a bit tough for Zeth.
All right, let's skip to 113, and then we'll do 112 and 114 together. Tanavast. Point of view, Tanavast. That's still odd to say. He has decided... what's her name? Uli Da, I think her name is. Who was holding devotion, has died. Or Odium pitted Dominion and devotion against each other, and they killed each other, but were blaming Odium. And so for Tanavast, he says, that's gone too far. She was super nice. And he's just going to kill anyone at this point. Because if you remember, two episodes ago, Honor confronts Odium about killing Ambition. That's right. Ambition. And Odium's excuse is, well, we all knew Ambition needed to go. I mean, Ambition was the most dangerous of us all, and I'm just doing you a favor. And now that he's killed Dominion and Devotion, Honor's like, okay, like you're not hiding anymore. We're going to go deal with you. So he convinces Cultivation, Corvellium, to join him. They go confront Raze, and Raze says, are you sure you want to do this? I'm going to explode everything if you kill me. And Honor's like, oh, darn it. So then they don't. What'd you guys get?
Pretty much mainly exactly what you just said. I don't know that I got too much like buried meaning or bits out of this. It seemed pretty face value. Big events. All these Tanavast chapters are big. A lot of these events, we've known a little bit about that they must happen. The destruction of Ashen, the fact that Honor, Cultivation, and Odium are all bound to worship. Like, we know all these things, but seeing them happen is kind of the big reveal going on here. And yeah, this moment where they say, no, we're going to take you out. And everyone there knowing that it could happen, that Cultivation and Honor would take out Odium. But Odium just playing the card of, and do you want to destroy this entire sector of the galaxy? Yeah. And they say no.
Once again, it feels like Raze is the third wheel here. There's quite an interesting love dynamic between Tanavast and Corvellium Avast. And also, fun side note, I feel like this chapter really plays up. I think it mentions it like twice in this chapter that Cultivation is like showboating in her dragon form, like showing up in her dragon form, her beautiful dark brown scales. And it kind of elaborates that on that a couple times. And I just thought it was funny. I feel like they're really setting it home. If you did not know, she's a dragon and really like showing off as a dragon, which surprised me a little bit. I mean, this was a long time ago, so I guess things have changed. But this is where Honor basically talks about creating the Stormfather. Is that right? And I think insinuates Cultivation doing the same with, I assume, the Night Watcher.
Yeah.
Which was cool. We're seeing the birthplace, that the moment, the start of the Stormfather and the Night Watcher, which is so dope. Like, that's awesome. I did not have that on my bingo board. I did not expect to see that. And I'm really curious if we get any more Tanavast point of view, if we might get dialogue or might get more information with the Stormfather that's relevant to our current day situation.
I thought it was kind of funny reading this chapter where he's talking about kind of the creation, the embodiment of the Stormfather, because I thought back to me of all of 5 years ago now, reading The Way of Kings for the first time and asking some very greenhorn questions like, who is the Almighty? And Trevor, you going like, well, it kind of depends. And yes, this chapter here, ask. Well, it feeds that fire. Like, he's going into this, he's like, and I created this being and he was me and I was he, and yet not fully me because I'm God and it doesn't work like that. I was just kind of chuckling like, okay, that doesn't even fully answer the question that I originally asked. And like, here's the answer. Here's the moment where it was always, who is the Stormfather? Is he God? Is he honor? Is he ad nauseum? It's like, well, kind of all of these things.
Yeah, that's true. Honor has a internal dialogue of, after they back off of Odium, he realizes, and that's why Adonalsium didn't fight back as we were going for him. And I'm like, because of the collateral damage that it would cause if there was actually a battle. And I was like, oh man, like, that's really sad. Adonalsium takes the hit as they're coming for him for the greater good of his creation. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It almost made me a bit sad because me and everyone else in the Cosmere really wants Odium, like, just gone, like, destroyed, defeated, splintered. And so, like, yeah, this was just kind of sad. But, well, I feel like I'm just sounding like a broken record. But just getting to see these scenes and this insight about Adonalsium and Tanavast is just like, what a treat. Like, this is so cool.
Yeah, for real. These are all inclusions that Brandon may have given like a wink or a nod to during like a signing. And if you read and watch all his signings and stuff, you know all this stuff. But putting it in a book is actually quite cool.
There's one bit here. I think I said earlier there wasn't nuggets buried in here, but maybe there is. When they make the pact, I don't know if the word pact is used actually, but that's where my brain is going. They all say, okay, we're going to stay here on this planet so we don't destroy everything. And Ray says, fine, I accept these terms. But then when he does that, like, power erupts and binds them all magically. And Reyes is basically like, oh, shoot, I didn't realize that was going to happen. And they realize that
he says,
like,
and I quote, what the hell was that? Because
yes,
Michael Kramer has a very great voice for it. It was quite funny.
And like, that's the moment where they get kind of tied at the hip to each other, where they have to abide by these terms or they open each other up to destruction, kind of thing. Like, I think this is where this is all coming back to. And Ray's maybe not even realizing that's what he was agreeing to. Ray's maybe thinking, oh yeah, I'll just, you know, agree to this and then, yeah, whatever later. And no, right, he's like magically bound to this through a power seeming to maybe have originated from honor, since like pacts and agreements is kind of honor's thing.
Right.
But Ray's was not expecting that.
Right. I think because honor is involved in this pact, quote unquote, now it has more weight than Odium was assuming it would, because honor is involved. All righty. Speaking of Odium, Jasnah versus Odium. Round one.
Do we, super fast, Do we want to hit Venli real quick and then do all of Odium and Yasna to close out the episode?
Okay, never mind. Venli gets to ride a Chasm Fiend. Hooray for everyone who had that on their bingo board. Somebody tells Venli that she's going to be a part of the second assault on Narok. And she has said that she's going to join the Singers, but in reality, she has this backhanded deal with Sigsel. And the fact that she's part of the second assault and not the first one that she assumed she was going to be is a problem. Like, I think they were going to, like, be a part of the first assault and then turn and, I don't know, what, like, maybe go back to Eurythia or something. I don't know. But the fact that they're part of the second assault is a problem for Venli's plan. She's very vague about her stuff in her point of view. What do you guys think?
I think the first of all, the Chasm Fiend riding is really cool. I thought this was really cool. And I don't know, it just like harkens back and makes me think of the culture and history that our Singers have. That's probably really cool and would probably be awesome to see a whole book about. And this is one of those things of like, you know, we intro this story with Chasm Fiends basically almost being the big bad, like these big monsters slain in coordinated assaults, and it's very treacherous. And they're just like off on a little joyride, like taking my new Chasm Fiend out for a spin. And I think that's really cool. The connection they have. Yeah, that's my honestly only side note here. Elliot may have something more relevant to add.
Not really. Other than just kind of trying to think through what might happen here, because Venli's on the wrong side, but apparently still has the motives of the right side. So what are we going to see here with a flip? Is she going to charge into battle and then just turn the other way? Is there more complex plan going on here? It feels like more complex plan is what is being hatched. I mean, we've got Sigsel. We talked about last week. Venli has alluded to needing to have Yasna involved in this plan. There's got to be something strategic cooked up here. I don't know what it's going to be, though.
The scene conveniently ends before anyone tells us anything about this Venli Sigsel stuff. Okay. Now Yasna, Teravantian, round one. This debate, it does not go where anyone is expecting, besides maybe Teravantian. And it starts with Queen Fenn and just saying, hey, there's nothing that you can say that will convince me, so why are we wasting our time? And Teravantian says, well, two things, Queen Fenn. One, you're a merchant. Don't you want to hear the offer before you say no? Second, you can distract me and spend a bunch of time, and I promise not to do anything, move against you as long as we're talking. So it's in your benefit to keep me talking. And then Queen Fenn and Yasna are like, yeah, okay, whatever. Go ahead. And so that's how it starts. And Teravangian makes a couple key blows against Yasna's personal character by the end of the debate. And it goes poorly. I think Ivory is in Queen's Fen, or Queen Ivory is in Yasna's ear the whole time, going like, oh, yep, good point. Nice job. Oh, that's bad. Don't back off from this point.
Don't let him steer.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So
yeah,
I haven't been enjoying this. What do you guys think?
Yeah, this was really neat. And yeah, you're right. Teravangian at the end seems to go with a very what's it called, ad hominem, logical fallacy. Starts attacking Yasna personally rather than the topic that's at hand to try and invalidate the discussion. And I have to say, I was really proud of both of our characters here, Fenn and Yasna, Because I went in very nervous, wondering what trick Todium would have up his sleeve of like pulling this out and being like, well, what about this? And then it's like, oh no, he's outlogicked us, and it is in Queen Fen's interest to like side with him. And okay, so where we end, he kind of goes for this like, you're a port city and I've made agreements with all the other traders and merchant cities around, so what good is a merchant city if you have no one to do business with? You
know, right.
No customers. That's where it ends. And I don't know. This was a good... These were like really good scenes, but I don't think it hit as hard as I thought it was going to hit. I don't know if that's just me. I don't know if other people disagree with that. I thought, once again, it was really good. And it was fascinating, and why I say I'm proud of our characters is they were not given in to Odium's little, quote, logical tricks. You know, he was trying to maybe confuse or misdirect or put scenarios up, and they were like, no, you're, like, even though our alliance with Dalinar and the Alethi are not perfect, it's not with you. Like, like they had a great deal of common sense, and I very much appreciated that. I was really afraid that we might go in and just have Queen Fen, who may even have been, like, I don't know, coerced previously or something. I was afraid of worse things. But they both felt very sound of mind and logical, and so I appreciated that. It doesn't solve the problem that's still on their doorstep about the future of the world and trade and all these things, but at least like this logical debate didn't feel like a success for Odium to me. Like, it felt like our character stood strong.
What'd you think of the huge threat that he makes, that he pivots to? So at first he's talking to Queen Fen of, you know, you should join us because the Alethi are terrible people and blah, blah, blah. And that doesn't really work. So then he pivots and says, all right, but all this talk is just me talking. I could clobber you in about 3 hours if I wanted to, but I don't want to. And Queen Fen's like, are you sure about that? I'm not convinced you can. And Teravengian says, trust me, bro.
So, give me my word. No more proof than my word, or something right. Like that.
What do you think of the huge hollow threat? Is it credible or not?
Okay, I thought about this a good bit. I'm glad you asked this. So I think it depends on Teravangian's word. Is that the, like, is him saying that up for debate of, like, if he breaks that word, that it, like, is him breaking his word as a shard, therefore, like, exposing him, like, or weakening him? If that's what we mean by his word, then yes, I believe he means what he says. But if it's just like, I don't have any proof other than my word that I'm saying I can come wipe you out, I don't know. Taking one step back, you asked how we feel about the threats. To me, it felt like a justification now that he was on the back foot in this argument. It felt like I'm losing, and so I'm like, hey, scare tactics now. Like, hey, I'm going to beat you up and take your lunch money if you don't side with me. I tried to be Mr. Nice Guy, like, and come talk it out, and you still said no, so I'm
good Todium, bad Todium.
Yeah, exactly. So now I'm gonna come destroy it by force. He says, well, I would welcome you, you know, open arms now, but I'd accept you broken and bloodied or something like that.
Yeah.
After a fight. So I don't know. I don't doubt that Odium has incredible power to do this. Like, I don't want to underestimate that. But in this scene, it felt like a, I'm losing the argument. I'm now resorting to threats of violence is what it felt like.
I agree. And that, like, that alone is enough reason for me to kind of instantly dismiss any thought of joining him. The person right. that just comes in and says, join me or I'll kill you. You don't want to be on that guy's team ever. Ever.
You, Elliot, you make a great point in the outline that I hadn't even really put together. You put, did you catch where Odium is hiding the fact that Carbranth is destroyed?
Ah.
That's actually a great point. There is no security. Like, his credibility goes out the window as Carbranth is under his control and he still wipes it off the planet. So there actually is no safety that he can offer,
and
credibly.
And it almost comes out because Yasna is like quoting one of Carbranth's philosophers.
Yeah.
And is saying, oh, well, so-and-so says, you know, this, which is in my favor. You know, we could just write to him and he would respond and support my argument. And Odium, like, cowers for a second, goes, yeah, I don't think he would respond. And yeah. It's like right in the moment, I was like, oh, aha. So no one knows Carbranth is destroyed. And if they did, that would crumble his entire argument in an instant.
Right. But,
yeah. Excellent point. I remember reading through this, and it's one of those, like, you desperately wish you could get one message across to the character that you're reading through their perspective. You know, like, we, the reader, know this, but none of our characters know it. And I'm like desperately like, all right, look, Brandon, let me pass one character, like one note into the world here to pass to Yasna. Like, hey, you're wondering why you haven't heard back from Carbranth lately. No one's been at their span reads. It's because there's nobody there. They're all disintegrated into nothingness. Like, they got obliterated. And I, like, they've got to discover that at some point, this book, right? Like, that's got to come up. Maybe it doesn't, but I feel like some messenger has got to be like, hey, I just went down there and, like, everything is gone. Like,
yeah, there's literally nothing left.
There's absolutely, it does not exist anymore. Like, someone's got to make that discovery, and that's a big deal. And yeah, that's a great point, Elliot. Yeah, as soon as that is evident and known to these characters, it's like there's no sense in even having this conversation. Like, any sense of an argument he has is absolutely gone.
But in the meantime, though, we have to contend with an ad hominem attack in Odium trying to slander Yasna, which we've got a classic Dalinar Blackthorn situation here of the accusations against Yasna are rather valid.
Yeah, I wanted to chime in on this. I love this as an inclusion from Brandon and from Taravangian. The inclusion of, like, the really small details way back in the Way of Kings or, you know, Oathbringer or whatever as fuel against our heroes, I'm a big fan of this. Dalinar throwing Elokar against the wall and being a bully to him, that coming back to bite him in book 5 in front of Gavinor, and then Yasna snapping her fingers and turning 4 guys into fire in the back alley, but way back in the Way of Kings part 3. That's really cool that Brandon's bringing up all these random, like, really small details as fuel for Taravangian. That's really, really cool.
And there's something interesting, I think, that we're about to get into with these situations with Yasna, because the two major bits of evidence here where Odium's basically saying, hey, you can't use I'm on the good guy's side as rationale here because the person standing next to you is not a good guy. The two bits of evidence for that are the back alley that you just talked about of not just killing muggers, but baiting the muggers to come after you and then killing them.
Right.
Was an important part of that. But the second one is worse, and it's like the last sentence of this segment before we cliffhang on it, which is something we discovered in a prologue of
the letter to kill Acedon.
Yes. This has got to be like Oathbringer prologue.
No, it's Words of Radiance.
Really?
Yes, it's Words of Radiance. It's like three chapters before she dies in Words of Radiance.
Yeah. That's right. And of course, yeah, it's the letter signed by Jasnah to assassinate Acedon, which is like, whoa, right? Here's my point, actually.
What's the assassin's name? I don't remember the assassin's name. Keep wanting to say Tin, but that's not correct. I don't remember. Anyway, not important. Go on.
That's gonna taunt me. Anyway, my point with all this, we've got two bad bits of evidence. The difference between bringing up the dirt on Jasnah and other attempts previously to bring up the dirt on Dalinar, that's my parallel I'm thinking of here. The difference is Dalinar has changed. Dalinar has said, I am no longer the Blackthorn. Can Jasnah say the same?
That's a great point.
I think she can. I think the Jasnah of today would still do these tough choice things. And that's the point that Odium is making here.
That's a great point, actually, because you're right. Right at the end of day 8 in, 10 chapters ago, Dalinar uses the past as fuel of, I know I did this, but I've already overcome this. So that this actually gives me strength that I've seen how far I've come. And that's really that's really cool. You're right, though. Jasnah's entire thing is do what needs to be done for the greater good of the most people. And Taravansian's throwing it back in her face. You're absolutely right that Jasnah hasn't changed. That's really interesting.
Now, this whole thing is a argument fallacy. He's not making a case about whether Fenn should join or leave. He's just all out attacking Jasnah, which is a terrible and rather dishonest debate tactic. Very valid point. Very much a concern with, can you trust Jasnah? Well, you mostly can. Still does not make any step, in my opinion, towards you should accept what Odium is saying. Not in the slightest.
But will Queen Fenn see it that way?
Uh-huh.
What do you guys think? Is Queen Fenn going to crumble to the Jasnah attacks?
I don't think to the Jasnah attacks. I think the market trade predicament that they have, the being able to trade with and do business with surrounding areas, like the economy of their nation, that being attacked is a way bigger deal than, hey, look, Jasnah has some skeletons in her closet. Like, that's really bad.
Right.
That's really, really bad. But like, we haven't seen Queen Fenn's perspective, but there's probably things she's not proud of as well. And there's things that they know Dalinar is very not proud of. And she kind of admits that of like, there's a lot of imperfections and a lot of wrongdoing here. But it is still good. Like, it is still a good agreement that we have, not worth going with you, Odium,
I thought actually the most convincing argument that Taravansian had was, what about your grandkids? What about Jasnah's grandkids? What, the Alethi are horrible people. We spent all of Oathbringer trying to talk you into the coalition because the Alethi are terrible people. So you could trust Dalinar, you could trust Jasnah, but what about their grandkids? What happens when the Alethi aren't happy with these permanent borders we've just drawn up and they want to come take over Thalen City? What's stopping them from that? I actually thought that was the most convincing Taravangian argument I get, like, that Queen Fen would actually listen to.
Gut reaction, I would agree. While reading this, like, that was like, okay, well, he could ensue peace for generations, right? But I love the argument that they themselves made of, one, Fen is saying my grandchildren as well will be able to defend themselves as I am able to do today.
Right.
You know, that it's kind of a playing on preying on a fear for the future and preying on, unforeseeable circumstances. There may still be an alliance that lasts generations, but there may be war that happens at that time. But those people get to unfold that, I guess. Not necessarily that you want Odium to enforce that. And then I had another point with this. I did think that was a good, like, ooh, okay, yeah, interesting. But I think Queen Fen was the one who pushed back on that, wasn't she? And she said things along the lines of, like, they're the ones who get to decide that. And also, like, removing the free will or the decision that our nations have,
right,
is like what makes you a nation, essentially, right? And so it's like, what would that be if we're not necessarily killing each other, but we have zero choice in life? You know, like, you're under full mandate law, I guess. So, yeah, I think they do it well, but for me it was more of the, like, not the hypothetical threat of two generations from now that's scary, or like Odium's best argument, but like the today, if this all goes according to plan, like, your nation will, your economy and your systems and your way of life will collapse because you will not have any allies around you anymore, anyone to do business with.
Yeah.
And therefore you will begin to fall apart and there's not much you could do about it. That was like the, I feel like he was really twisting their arm. Like, either I'm going to take you by physical force and overrun you and destroy Thalen City, or it's like the wait you out tactic. Like, okay, how long can you survive on your own? You know, isolated. Yeah, you have maybe the Alethi, but like, that's not going to sustain you. And it'd be the two of y'all, essentially, is what he's saying, against the world. And you're not going to make it. You know, so I felt like that was the big hitter.
And for me, reading these arguments, I thought the tactic that Odium is trying to take there highlights for me the problem with the utilitarianism philosophy that he's trying to poke at, because that's Yasna's position. Yasna's position is, I will do the tough thing that results in the most good for the most people. And so Odium is basically trying to say, siding with me is a terrible, tough decision, but in the long run will be the safest and most stable for the most people. The most lives will be saved. One problem with that, that the part of that that I can't swallow to even consider that as a logic path, gets revealed when you start talking about, oh, my grandchildren's grandchildren, this and this and this and this. When you start looking that far in the future, there's so many unknown variables that could enter into that picture. At this point, to make a very large life and death decision for many people right now, based on one of many possibilities 100 years in the future, doesn't make any sense to me. And so making a decision now based on what I know right and wrong to be, and look at the evidence of what a pretty clearly evil being has done, that there's no rationale at all that makes me consider wanting to join that being.
Yeah. I agree entirely. it all, like, honestly, to the point that, okay, so I should preface with, I think these were well written chapters and really good, but these arguments that Odium made kind of didn't meet my expectations. I realize, and I would say this is Brandon's fault for being such a good writer, that I have such high expectations for moments like this. I'll pin the blame on him. I was a little disappointed. I kind of expected it to be more so of me thinking like, ooh, okay, yeah, he's got to really, I don't know, pulling the rabbit out of the hat, like crazy twist here that makes sense. And there, he definitely made lots of attempts, but they never felt convincing to me. That's probably a good thing. I also, on the flip side, don't want to go in and be like, ooh, yeah, no, Odium makes a great point here.
She should probably join Odium.
I'm so on board. Yeah, Queen Fan, go make your choice. Like, Odium's the one. You know, I don't want to be in that camp, but I did think this was going to be a little bigger of a moment for me. Other people may disagree. I'm curious, and I'd be very curious to know what people think about this scene. But also, coming off the back of last episode, we had the scenes with Nail, Zeth, and Kaladin, and I thought that was really big. And I was kind of expecting the same hit here. And yeah, it felt like easy to spot logical fallacies and some threats, you know? So it didn't stack up to me, but that does not mean it was bad. I think it's good. And this may literally just be the precursor to potentially another war happening here. It could still happen. So,
or maybe Tervengeance is having a bad day, you know? It's not like one of his peak, you know, intellect days.
Yeah.
Ooh, you are right about that. I haven't thought about that in a minute.
Anything else, gentlemen?
All for me.
Devani's back with Gavinor. I guess we need to acknowledge that.
Gavinor check.
All right. We can call it there. For next week, we have no interludes. We have 115 through 119 for 264. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Toodles. On we go.